This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carb Capriato here. I hope you are well. Now, we continue to create and build momentum to learn and change together. Please use our mountain of audio and video content as your personal networking group. Hey, this episode continues the previous discussion about learning environments and breaking the mold for both teachers and students. This group wants to revamp training, the lectures and the presentation style, with smaller focus groups that will allow the attendees to understand theories and concepts and have them apply it within a study group. This episode will push your think on the transfer of knowledge, and maybe, just maybe, it's time to break the mold on training. Hey, thanks to our partners Shopware and Broadly for providing you this episode. You know, every minute of a tech day impacts your profitability, so you want to track that time and make the most of it. Shopware's shop management software will give you transparency into each team member's performance. You want to hear more? We'll learn about it at GetShopware.com. Are you tired of wasting money on ads that no one sees? Well, Broadly can change that for you. It gets you more Google reviews, so prospects will see your shop when they search for auto repair in your area. Find them on the web at getbroadly.com/chat. We're here to talk about learning environment again, and I've got a great panel. It was about 10 weeks ago that we actually tore apart, are you getting value from your training dollar? And it really got a lot of legs, a lot of listens, a lot of watches. And I so loved where you went, but it almost felt like we needed to do more. And so the team that is kind of all over the country and traveling like crazy, we were able to carve out some time to record this and take this to the next level. Jim Kokonas, Senior Curriculum Developer, CarQuest Technical Institute. Hello, Jim.
Good morning. Good noon. Where are we? Good noon.
Good noon for wherever we are around the world. Justin Morgan, LMV Bavarian, Tech Support and Trainer, ASE Wave Technical Ambassador, CMAT. You have it all, right? I mean, are you a practicing surgeon too?
I'm not. I don't have any cool letters after my name like Anthony.
And that just is perfect segue, Justin. Thank you so much. Anthony Williams, Masters in Education, Special Project Manager, CarQuest Technical Institute, and Advanced Professional. Guys, how are you?
Great.
Today, I'm looking to hear about the continuing discussion about the misunderstanding of learning styles, the level of engagement that's a big part of learning, and the teaching process, and what role do we all play, the challenge for teachers and students, because I think it's the responsibility is on both. And in the last episode, we discussed how more advanced learning environments are having learners test, prove, debate, and forge what they have learned into higher levels of knowledge. I can't wait to hear about these cutting edge ideas, and I think it kind of took COVID to have all this come out to the top. Anthony, I really would love to start with you. Splitting classes up, you're passionate about that, and guys, just let's have some fun and share some great ideas on how we're going to improve our learning environment.
There's a lot of new technologies to use, but I'd like to point out that these teaching practices have withstood the test of time. They've been around since the 30s, 40s, 50s, and they've been adapted and they've been tested out and they've been expounded on. But the key thing to know is that the human mind has long since been this way. It's not new. I'd like to address something before we get too far in the weeds on it, and that's the idea of presentations versus a class, because those are two different, completely different settings, and we started getting into that last time a little bit. Presentation is a large group, a large gathering. So when you go to things like these, the big shows like Vision or whatever other alphabet soup you have out there, those are a lot more geared to presentations. You get big groups of 20 to 50 to 75 people that are listening to a concept or a theory. Those aren't the times to teach. Those are the times to present an idea out, to engage the listener, to engage the audience into something that they may want to further delve into later. They may want to take classes to understand that better. Those are not the times that we really need to be testing and figuring out where each audience member is or how to separate them. There's a lot of great ways to engage that audience. And I've noticed that even inside of that field, we've been well behind the curve inside the automotive industry. And, you know, I've watched and seen presenters that have told me, you know, you have to stay up in front of the group. You can't look at the slides. You can't turn your back to the group. You know, those things are long since antiquated and outdated, but that's a whole nother discussion later to talk about presentations. I'd like to dive into the actual training classes. When your group meets together with a trainer nearby, you're not traveling across states to get to a presentation, but the trainers are near you. They're coming to your shop. They're coming to your town. You may have to drive a town or two away to get to them, but somewhere where you go and it's a little bit tighter group, it's a little bit closer to that, like 10, 15, 20 people that have been together that are following a sequence of classes. That's what I'd like to make sure we kind of make sure that we're not trying to compare apples and oranges, that presentation and class are not the same thing. Is that fair, fellas?
I think that's extremely fair. I mean, it has to be for exactly the reason you said, that you can't have the same level of engagement with a presenter or instructor if you have 15 people in your class versus if you have 35 versus if you have 100. It would be impossible. There's no way. You would probably get like 6 minutes into the presentation and then the rest of it would just be Q&A session, because you would have so many different opinions, so many different questions, so many different scenarios thrown at you. So I would agree with that.
So I guess my point is there's a lot that can change the quality of a presentation to even make it a better learning environment. And so these speed downloads of a whole bunch of information, and I know you're confused right now, but don't worry, you'll get it later. That's the kind of stuff that I don't care if there's 5 people or 500 people in the room, that's still a less than optimal learning environment. I still think that we can have conversations around what makes a good presentation. And a presentation can be engaging and can engage the mind at the seat and can engage the students with some of the technologies we talked about to ask them questions, to get feedback from the audience so that the audience can understand, hey, we did a check for understanding. There's 200 people in the room. 200 people answered this survey question and 37% of them didn't have the right view of the topic yet. And so if you're not there, you're not alone. And that could still be a way of engaging students in a learning, because now they're going to pay attention.
I would agree. I wouldn't go down the path of saying that we couldn't make these presentations much better from engagement to an actual learning environment, because you can learn from lectures. You can still learn from somebody talking up at the front. It's the idea of how much does a presenter talk versus how much is a instructor or teacher going to talk in a class setting. Inside of a presentation, it's harder to get the engagement and the feedback and the discussion going inside of a large setting for the very thing that Justin said, that you're going to have too many points of views. One key factor, and this plays both into class and a presentation, is that the louder and more boisterous personalities will always run that setting. Not because they're right, but because of just the sheer, their voice, their demeanor, their timbre, their being will always kind of push that conversation. And the ones that are much more quiet will sit back. And that's how you can end up getting derailed when you have a large setting with too many voices going, as opposed to when you have a smaller setting inside of a class, you can have those voices and you can pull those voices because your group is smaller. You can highlight the ones that aren't speaking or talking or being part of it. My viewpoint is that we should pick one setting and understand, and for all those of you guys listening, is understand that you can use the skills in both settings. The hard part is if we jump back and forth from setting to setting to setting to setting, it'll keep our discussion shallower and we won't be able to dive deep down into something. I just want the audience to also hear that you can switch, you can use the tools in both places, but they just change and vary slightly. Dig into the tool and then figure out how you can use it. You know, your screwdriver can be used for screws, or it can use to carve your name in your bench when you're bored. There's multiple uses for it. So
I kind of was on the same page with Anthony when he said what he said, because I think I connected with him exactly what he just said. Jim, I don't disagree with what you're saying. It's not a cop-out that this can't be better than it is or there can't be a level of engagement. I'm just saying that I don't think that larger seminar presentation will ever be to the same level of engagement just because of the size of it, right? That's why we have focus groups.
Hey, Carm here. Now, ever been a presenter or a trainer? Well, how do you check for understanding from your student? What questions should you ask? Keep listening and find out. Hey, we all have bad days when we just want to turn to someone and ask, how the heck do I fix this? When that happens to you on the business side, which may not be your strong suit, you want someone quick and you want them to be clear. That's exactly what Dan Groen from Detroit Garage found when he peppered the folks at Shopware with questions about how to make the most of its shop management system. As he puts it, they continually solve the curveballs we throw at them. With 7 shops, Dan jokes that he knows he's a demanding client, but that's the sign of a guy committed to his business. Even better, the Shopware support team met every challenge with, in Dan's words, impressive capabilities and vigor. No complaints, no hassles, just a commitment to help Dan through his day. As Dan says, we make each other stronger. Now that's a partnership that works. It's time. Get Shopware.com. Did you know there's actually a best time to ask a customer for an online review? It's true. According to Broadly, asking for a review right after service is key. Think about it. That's when the car looks good and the customer is happy and in the best frame of mind to give you a good review. And all those good reviews, well, that's what's going to get the attention of people who search for auto shops online and get you even more customers coming into your shop. Do you have a company helping you out with reviews? Do they make sure each customer is being asked to leave you a review? Broadly gives you the confidence to ask and receive more quality online reviews from your clients. Get Broadly's system. Help prospects have confidence in your shop when they see a large number of 5-star reviews. Make the move. Visit Broadly on the web at getbroadly.com/chat to start chatting with a Broadly representative and learn more on the web at getbroadly.com/chat. I love focus group. It's almost, guys, maybe we could change the names of the courses that we offer as trainers, that Justin is going to teach a focus group instead of do a seminar, do a presentation or whatever. And we tell the industry that this focus group is small. It's tiny. And oh, by the way, because we created this thing called a focus group, we know the role Justin plays. This paradigm shift has got to happen. Justin, you play this particular role. And oh, by the way, Mr. Student, Mrs. Student, this is the role you play. And at the beginning of that focus group, we're talking about team and discussion. And again, Anthony, you brought up something that I remember from college, and that was the lecture. I really hadn't thought of it until now. We used to go to lecture, Anthony, and we had to take notes, know the material so that we could pass the test on Friday, right? We're lecturing, and we need to reinvent what lecturing is. We can't be a presenter that's only lecturing. I guess that's the whole point here, is that we have to change our learning environment. So I want to offer up focus group as a really neat new name for what you guys are talking about.
The last episode, we had a conversation about challenging the status quo at these big events. We have to stop making these blanket statements. I learn best hands-on. If it's not hands-on, I get lost and I'm bored. Yeah, and 2 hours into an 8-hour class, you're standing in the corner talking NASCAR, and there's nothing wrong with NASCAR, but you're in the corner talking NASCAR because there wasn't enough there to keep you engaged. So let's break that down. Oh, when you have 100 people in the room, there is no way that you can do advanced high-level learning. Well, what if we break the paradigm? What if you're not going to see the one sage on the stage, but we have a class that the content, the setup for the course is taught by one primary person, and he shows up with 10 instructors for breakout sessions that are going to lead those 10 groups for a breakout. And why can't we break that paradigm? You know, I'm not here to herd the cows. I'm here to make burger. And it's like, why can't we grind up some of these standard things? I got in trouble as a young man because I was in a shop, and there was a guy, and he was the person behind the parts counter, and I was one of the mechanics that knew how to read microfiche and fill out my own tickets. I'm dating myself here, right?
Microfiche.
I saw that in the museum the other day when I took my kids.
You're a funny boy. Okay. Okay, Carm, you see the pattern here? He called you old last time. Now he's calling me old because of microfish.
It's so easy for Anthony to drop us like that.
All right. So
I've got nothing. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to keep my mouth shut because I've used microfish and just.
I hope you brought a lunch today. Anyway, so.
I used to get paint formulas on microfish. All right.
So in seriousness, though, I had permission from the shop foreman to go back because you would stand at the counter waiting for things you needed for a job. And I could go back, look up my parts, look into microfish, find the parts, write the part numbers down, write the prices down, and be out of there before dear old Lester would be ready to talk to you. And he would fuss and snort. I don't understand why you got to be back here. And I was a young man, and I had this attitude. And Lester said, I don't understand why we're doing this. And I said, at the time, I said, Lester, 23 years ago, something changed. Yeah, what was that? I was born, Lester. So I've kind of had that rebel attitude of why do we have to do it this way just because that's how it's always been done? Why can't we collectively challenge ourselves as an industry, as consumers of training content, as providers of training content to go, can we do better than even what's accepted as the best venues to go to? And why are they perceived as the best? What is it that's really there? And at some point, you start to look around and you realize that those breakout groups, Carm, you've looked around. They're happening in the lobby. They're happening at the bar. They're happening at the lunch tables. And so whether or not the educators or the organizers set it up, they're happening. And a lot of the guys that go to these things on a regular basis, sometimes this is an open-ended question. Is it really that environment and that engagement between the programming that's what really is firing their cylinders? Because they're taking what they heard and now they're going and beating it up in conversation or, you know, going out into a parking lot and trying different things. I want to create some positive challenges for those of us on the side of teaching and organizing events, and for those of us who are learners, students, techs, however you want to take it, to push and be more focused and picky and perhaps even demanding in what we seek out in training. You know, Anthony and I, we both kind of raised this thing that we try to pack too much into a class to really go deep. Right. That's one of the topics we've had. And we should explore that. Mm-hmm. Going back to your class, one of the first times I've seen you actually present in front of a group of people and looking at the material, you didn't need a book this thick of single sided slides. Say that 10 times real fast. You had enough content with enough key points to make the conversation, engage the students, and then show them how it worked. And that's why they walked out of there going, that was awesome. Because you actually gave them something they could act on, even if they didn't use it tomorrow. But you gave them a clean pathway. So how do we make the training and the learning environment fit that as much as we can? And you didn't have 15 students in that class, but you did have interaction.
I did have interaction.
You had responsiveness. And so now how do we take that and make it even deeper with different sizes of classes?
One of the things that I live my life in is that you cannot present a problem to anybody unless you potentially have a solution or at least a path that you want to try to correct said issue with, right? You can't be the problem guy, okay? You can't just go, that's broken. Okay, well, why is it broken? What can we do to unbreak it? I just did seminars Saturday and Sunday, two totally different subjects. Actually, Saturday was two half days, same students. So we did a small subject before lunch. We did a small subject after lunch. And then Sunday, we did something that we tried in the virtual environment. We took it to the plane. So we were, and you said something that brought this up to me is, my change is for that engagement to get that different learning path, to try a bunch of different things at one time. We did what we call a diagnostic challenge class. And so I do tech support. So what I do is I bring tech support cases into the classroom. I present what I was given on the phone or what I was given in the email. And then I give guys access to all the documentation that it would take to fix the car, the wiring diagrams, the functional descriptions. I pull ISTA up in the middle of the class And then I break guys up into four-man teams, and I make sure that they're not working with anybody that was in their shop, because I want them to start learning from each other. And while they're pulling this apart, they start looking at things from different directions. Then we present each other. So then I come back in as the leader, right? So I'm going from group to group, kind of mentoring a little bit in these focus groups. And then I come back up and we present and we talk about which path they took. And we talk about which path they went. And I tell everybody flat out, I don't care what fixes the car. That's not the point of the class. The class is to help better you in the understanding of how to get an answer. I don't sell fish. I sell fishing poles. That sparked even more conversation during the lunch, because lunch was on site. Guys broke up into a separate little cafe room at lunch for an hour. And they were over just, oh, you know, when we were doing that, I've never done this or I've never done that. And like, I could totally eliminate even checking that, because this, this, and this took place. And I knew that right off the get-go. And it was just, I mean, look at this, goosebumps. It's pretty phenomenal. So that's where I try to break that mold, try something different. If it blew up in my face, it blew up in my face, but at least we tried it and I think it's going to work. We've presented our problem now, right? We have a problem. We know there's some engagement issues. We know that there's some instruction styles that are used that just are not cutting it. So what are the rest of our solutions? Do we have any more?
That's exactly how you use groups. Break the monotony of listening to one person talk in the front of the room. And those that are listening, if there's trainers that are listening into this, for their takeaway, I want them to hear new possible strategies that they can put into place. And that's fantastic one. And Jim said earlier, you know, bringing 10 other trainers into the room so that you could break into groups. You don't need 10 trainers. You have technicians in there of different walks in their career. But breaking apart and making sure that they don't break into their normal groups. They don't break into just their technicians from their shops or their areas.
Their clique or their...
Yeah. I like getting people out of their seats. Get them moving. Step them into the middle and then break them apart. You know, my wife teaches second grade. I took everything she did, because if you think about school, when was school fun? Elementary. Dude, you got to do so much stuff in elementary. The middle school, you start learning to sit there more and they're talking more and you're taking more notes. And then high school, it's nothing but sit still, shut up and listen. It's boring. Why did we lose that? And Justin, you did the same thing. You grabbed that second grade mentality and you said, all right, you guys want to talk. We didn't change from the people we were in as little people to now. And some of us haven't grown out of little people. That wasn't a joke at you, Tanner. That was just what I was going from a joke I read earlier. But get them engaged, break them apart, and they're meeting and talking inside of a unfamiliar territory.
I love where this is going. Guys, the second grade, you are so right. Just think about how mobile we were and how, you know, I'm going to go and get some Play-Doh. I don't know if they still do that today. Learning with our hands and our eyes and our bodies and in teams. It's brilliant, guys. Thank you for that.
In case anybody doesn't know, LMV Bavarian, I work with Seth Thorson, right? So this is kind of a product of his brain. And so we decided that we were going to try this in a classroom, because it worked out with Zoom and breakout rooms, and we could float through the breakout rooms. And it was a good way for us to break the monotony of the virtual era, right? And it allowed guys to do something that they weren't getting to do, which we've both, all three of us talked about, have those little conversations between sessions at seminars or see each other at dinner after a class. It gave them that opportunity to do it. They get to talk to Anthony. I haven't seen you in a year and a half. Hey, look, this is a breakout room right here. Yeah. And there would be five or six of those.
That's awesome, Justin. I love, because I was actually going to take this and explain how can you do it in the virtual world with just that. And you're making me want to go and work with you a lot more here. It's hard to get people to understand that you can do this in real life, that the groups are a great way you can break them up inside of a normal classroom. But you can take the same thing inside of your virtual class. If the virtual class, you're sitting there and talking, there's a lot that are talking to the empty screens as well, you know? Throw the cameras on so that you can see each other and you can be with each other and use those features like the breakout room to create the smaller conversations to allow those with a more timid voice to feel more comfortable to share. Don't leave it in the big room all the time. And it doesn't have to be the instructor up in front or the instructor leading the whole time. Let them lead inside of their own groups. Let them discuss, let them share, let them talk, and then come back and you can adjust where you need to go by what was said.
The student, here's your responsibility. Trainer, here's your responsibility. Can we talk about that?
I would like to start seeing more instructors trying to do things like Justin's doing. Even in a presentation mode, standing up in front of the stage it's not where everything comes from, because then you become the focal point, not the information. So get off the stage. There's enough wireless mics now that you can walk around. I like to give the mic up, okay? And I encourage this for a lot of instructors that are out there that give big presentations. Give up the mic. Take it, walk around, ask a question, and when somebody has an answer, you give it to them and let them explain their answer out. Move them to the center, and you sit down in their seat. You sit down. Let them talk for a couple of minutes. Let them get their idea out. Then when they're done, you take that mic, you let them sit down, and then you find who has something that's counter to that, who has something that's different than that, who has something that's going to challenge that. Give that mic up again and let the room start talking to itself.
I just learned something. If I went in there as a lecturer presenter and I had 2 hours to present all my material and I prepared for 2.5, that means I want to rush through my slides and get them done. I don't have the creativity to allow the discussion to happen because I want to rush back and get all my slides done.
So that goes back to something that Jim has said, I have alluded to, and I am almost positive Anthony's only said it like 9 times. Is we are putting too much into one session of a class. It's not that you have to be creative, Carm. If you put 2 hours worth of content in a 2-hour time session, you've eliminated all of the ability to have that engagement. Dial it back. Now you're going to subconsciously, as an instructor, force yourself to go out there and have those conversations and get the discussions.
Let me just give you some personal experiences as someone who has been a contract instructor, an employed instructor. I've been told as an instructor, you better get through this material. Because if the students are sitting in class, those of us with the gift of free-ranging conversation and asking questions, okay, I can hand you a book that's 184 pages. And I just went for 2 hours and covered the first 8 slides. Now, does that mean I'm not teaching anything or I'm not getting a student to engage and learn and pick up things? No. But invariably, there will be some student in the class that's looking at the page that you're on and flipping through the book and looking at the clock and doing it so obvious. They're not learning because they don't understand that I don't have to give you everything in that book. If I give you the concepts and how to learn this material, you've got the book to go home and continue your education. We've got to change these preconceived notions about what a solid class is. He didn't get halfway through the book, but my goodness, did you hear the conversations that happened in class?
It's a change of expectations.
It is.
We need to set those expectations before the class starts. Because I would push back that the reason why instructors are told they have to get through the book is because that's what was sold. They sold them, hey, a complete diagnostic manual on this particular car. So that's what they buy. So they're going to learn everything there is to know in this 4 hours, as opposed to, hey, we're going to talk about step one of this diagnostic process today. This is what this 4 hours is, just step one. Here's the entire book. Bring it back with you on the next class, on class 3, on class 4, on class 17. When you get a college book, it's not taught all in one lecture. It's not taught in one 4-hour sit down. A matter of fact, every single book that I've grabbed from college has never been touched from cover to cover in a class. Just what you said, they teach you the concepts and they go with the assumption you know how to read. You can finish reading it on your own.
And Carm, this goes to the question that you asked. You know, what does the shop that's sending their techs to training, what do they expect? We've got to learn to set those expectations too. Is what constitutes training? You know, what classes would you guys like to see? I don't know. You're the teacher, right? Because they don't know what they want, but they expect us to magically know what it is. And in some respects, I understand that. You know, we're watching what's going on in the industry and we're seeing where the issues are. But this comes back to that notion of getting the paradigm shift to doing some pre-qualification testing. And Anthony brought up this whole idea about everybody's got an ego, and he's absolutely right. And so, you know, I'm fearful of speaking up in class because I don't want people to think I'm crazy. They balk at taking a prerequisite to test out or something to assess where they are because, you know, the new broom sweeps clean. And I came in and I said, I'm a master at this stuff. And I've been doing this for 20 some years. And you know, I don't need that. I need super high zoot training. This idea of getting students to ask questions in class or giving them the mics, that is a phenomenal tool, and it is a huge responsibility of the person in charge. And here's what I mean. Think about that second grader, right, Anthony? If they come up to you and they ask you a question or they want help understanding something, you cannot rebuff that. You have to embrace that. You have to nurture it. You have to encourage it because you want them to come to you and ask questions. I'll never forget. I was out in the Midwest somewhere. I was teaching an EVAP class, and I showed them the pressure chart of how low a pressure differential. I'm laughing now. How low a pressure differential EVAP tests with fractions of a pound, right? And this guy, he put his hand up in class. And I said, you know, so you don't want to just go up, take the gas cap off and stick an air nozzle down the gas cap and see if you hear a leak, right? I said it as a joke. And this guy put his hand up. He says, oh, man. He said, we had a canister we couldn't find a leak on. And that's what a guy did. He stuck an air hose in it. And of course, he said, that just blew up. And I'm standing there trying, because I, in my mind, I just saw this charcoal canister blow up and there's black beads all over the shop. And that's exactly what happened. And so I started to lose it. And I'm like, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. I said, is everybody okay? Oh, yeah, they were fine, but this chip was everywhere. And then the whole room kind of busted up because now we knew everybody was okay. But he came up with something that drove the point home to a class. But at the same token, you can have a student that will give a flat wrong answer. We're not even talking it's a different opinion. It's a flat wrong answer. How do you handle that? And that's an art too. I say, okay, what is every, you know, do we have any counter opinions? You guys want to rumble a little bit and let the students interact a little bit and make it a safe place that they can have that and go, I can understand why you thought this, but let's hear what John's going to say. And that's something to guide people through as well.
Part of your role is to deal with half your slides, roving mic, engaged stories that everyone's sharing, and all the other really cool tricks. But here's what I wrote. I says, you're going to have to go back and read. You're going to have to go back and do. You're going to have to go back and share. And you're going to have to go back and teach. And when all that happens, you're going to get your training dollars right out of this class. If we're not doing that in the beginning and having fun for that 2 hours, we're just lecturing.
Jim is exactly right. If you get that person, because I had mentioned on our last conversation that I have seen a lot of social anxiety preventing people from raising their hand or making a comment in class or being called on in class. If they make that leap to step up on that ledge and raise their hand against whatever is in their body that's telling them not to, you can't stifle that. You can't. Like Jim said, even if it's a flat wrong, what's 2 plus 2? 37 and a half. That you cannot be like, that's wrong. You have to ask, what's your process? How did you get to that? Let's back up and break it down. Does anybody else have an opinion? Does anybody else see his point of opinion? Right? Make it a learning experience, not a that's not how that works. That's going to hammer everybody else from doing it. They're not going to raise their hands anymore. We had some talking points amongst the three of us, not to air our secrets or anything, but one thing that I mentioned that I wanted to talk about was honesty with ourselves, not just instructors, but as students as well. Carm, you just hit the nail on the head. I can't teach you everything. there's a progression. And as a student, you have to understand that you're going to realize an idea in the class. It's your job to go back and use it, apply it, prove that it works or that it doesn't work, and master it. So you have to be honest with yourself that you're not just going to pick this book up right here, sit in this class, and come out as an expert.
By the time this gets released, we will have released an episode with Chris Cloutier about ego. And there are such incredible takeaways in there. And that's one of the problems, Anthony, that you just brought up, is that, you know, my ego gets in the way for me doing certain things. And there were some incredible takeaways. And one of them was, don't be untouchable. Be touchable. Be vulnerable. And I think it's a great quality and a trait to have, that if you could put your ego on the shelf, what do you replace it with? Vulnerability. Tell me, teach me. I'm okay with it.
And it's a skill that teachers, instructors, whatever you want to call them, in the front of the class, in front of the presentation, that's our job, is to create an environment where they feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable. Teaching high school, I had a student, the lesson was trying to calculate on cubic inch displacement. So they had the bore, they had the stroke. In his math, his failure, he came up with like 3,490 or some crazy four-digit number. And he was measuring the bore and stroke of a 350. And I said to myself, how did you get so far off? And I went through, and his math was all correct, except for when you got to the point of carrying the one, he hadn't done it. He brought it down and made a double digit into his number that shouldn't have been there. And his problem wasn't, did he understand how to measure and how to do the math? His problem went all the way back down to number sense. But had I berated him, had I been mean about it, had I laughed and go, oh my God, you're so far wrong. Do you even cook? How do you deal with money? If I would have berated him in any of those ways, he would have shut down completely, and I wouldn't have been able to get any more work out of him. But instead, I asked him, okay, can you walk me through step by step? And we went step by step until we ran into the issue, and then we slowed down and we went to just that issue. Nothing to do with automotive, nothing to do with anything else in life, just this one issue. Let's take this core foundational problem and address it.
There's one thing I'd like to request we have a conversation about. In classroom, appropriate uses of questioning or probes for the instructor to know whether to get on the gas or get on the brakes.
You're probing questions. There's two different styles. You're probing a conversation and trying to get it to continue down a path, or you're probing, looking to see where their understanding is. So in a check for understanding, you need to be very specific on what you're looking for. You cannot give an overarching question. The Mitch Hedberg, he said he hated taking like government census questions or like, you know, questionnaires where they had multiple different things inside the question. And we do it quite often in the automotive field. But he said, you know, he'd hate getting questions that said, have you ever tried sugar or PCP?
I'm not checking yes on that.
Right? It's not fair. That's you threw two things in there. So it's that idea that, hey, when you're asking the question, don't throw multiple things inside that question. Go back to the very, very pinpoint basic thing. What are you looking for? What do you want them to show you? If you want them to show you that they understand steps, then make sure you ask them that. What steps in order do I need to take to do this? Then you're directly asking them to repeat a steps. If you want them to apply information, you don't ask them a yes or no question, or you don't ask them to repeat something or regurgitate information. You're going to ask them a question that's going to be leading. So you would ask them a question with a scenario base to it. If these are the readings I have, then what would I look for next? Because now you're not probing for just repeating an information that they read. You're looking for them to apply something they learned into your scenario.
Anthony, how often do we expect the teacher to do this?
That goes to how much you're trying to fit in. If you only have three objectives, then you have only three targets that you're looking for. And if they're pinpoint objectives, then your questions, you can question as many times as you need. You're just rewording your question to look for those specific objectives that you nailed for. In our current setting right now, where we have, you know, what 250 slides we're trying to get through, if you were to break down all the objectives, all the little pinpoint targets they were looking for, you would have to ask questions every 2 to 3 minutes during that event to try to make sure that they hit each one of those before moving on.
Getting our money's worth, guys, is almost not that I have 200 slides. Getting our money's worth is that I actually was able to convey the theory of our class.
Exactly.
If you have a small subject that only has 3 or 4 points, you can consistently do it throughout. If you have a larger presentation, you may only need to do it after the 4th or 5th block. That way you know whether you need to turn back or whether you can turn forward. So it's kind of dependent on the size of the overall subject being discussed. Do I have 3 sub-subjects or do I have 27 sections and 5 chapters?
That's exactly it. Justin, I think that was a great way to explain it out.
I would like to add one more concept to that, is when we think about asking questions, really think about asking the questions. Here's a phrase that I have been steeped in here recently. If you want to exhaustively test for understanding and you want the answers that you get to be predictive of a student's comfort and knowledge level, the questions have to be incisive. So true or false, they can guess and have a 50-50 shot. When we put in distractors in a multiple choice question, is that distractor plausible? Who's the first president of the United States? George Washington, Waffles, Mickey Mouse, or Dirt? That's too easy to guess. But we see, oh, I had to ask questions before and after the class to be certified by some program. And we see that those kinds of questions are all over the place, or used to be, or whatever. And so asking good, incisive questions and then listening to the answer you get will tell you whether or not you can plow ahead or go back. And the other thing that I always told students was, I don't care if you don't understand what I just said, because I don't look at it as your problem. And here's that safe environment. If I have tried to explain something and I have a feeling in the room that I haven't conveyed it, that is a challenge to me to come at the topic in a better way for the students that aren't getting it to lock it down. So that's on me.
The tip of your learning iceberg, lecture being the lowest retention, the highest retention being teaching others, the student in the room that is trying to retain the most knowledge, the student in the room that is trying to gather the most information or trying to test their own understanding is the teacher. And I think that's the hard part. A lot of people don't realize is that the person that is teaching is also a student, because that is where you take, okay, I know the information, but if you know everything in your head, you have all these cool terms, you have all these awesome big words, but you cannot verbalize it. You cannot get it out of your head and to others. It shows that there is a lack of understanding. I can say, I get it. I understand that if I push my brakes and it pulls to the right or pulls to the left, that I probably have a restriction in the line. But when I try to explain it to somebody, all I'm going to give them is, well, there's a restriction in the line. Well, what kind of restriction would cause this? Or, well, what caused the restriction? What parts do I have to look at? Well, I don't know. Something in there is going to cause it. Then that shows that I, as a teacher, did not have a strong enough understanding to break it down. And so a challenge that I give to everybody, whether they're teaching in a classroom, teaching in the automotive field, is to say, take your information and try explaining it to an adult, then explain it to a teenager, then explain it to an elementary school kid. If you cannot explain it to an elementary school level kid, then you need to go back to your understanding of it.
When you teach, you learn. And I think that's the great, great message, not only for the teacher on their very own, the in charge of class, but for the student to realize that if he doesn't go back and do something with what he just went through, he's going to lose it. I mean, what's the stats of how quickly you lose stuff over 30 to 45 days if you don't do something with it?
The Ebbinghaus curve.
That's right. The Ebbinghaus curve. Now,
that's what the letters get you.
You know all the cool big words.
See, I knew there was a property about that. I didn't know who was responsible. Thanks, Anthony.
Listen, I think we laid an incredible amount of information on our listener, be it the student, be it the shop owner, be it the trainer, anyone who cares about being better in everything that they do.
The focus, the ability to really look at those topics and to understand, you know, a learning objective, if you want it to be clear, will be very focused. And that will lead to a focused probe or something you can use to check for it. And then you have to have the information available to the student for them to be able to make a correct answer. So it's getting very scientific. I just got a response on a project that I'm on, and I'm now getting feedback on doing this. You know, in my head, that was great. I had it all, but I forgot some little detail. And Natalia said, you know, you need to focus on this stuff. So this is what's running around in my head, trying to make curriculum, not just content.
Can you imagine going in and getting graded as an instructor because you covered the content, but no one learned anything? That would be so terrible. Let's do a part three. We'll do that in a little bit. We'll make this thing calm down. Jim Kokona, senior curriculum developer at CarQuest Technical Institute. Justin Morgan from LMV Bavarian, technical support and trainer. And Anthony Williams, Master of Science Education, special project manager at CTI and Advanced Professional. Guys, appreciate it. Thank you. I'm honored to have you guys on again.
Thanks, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.